This is not going to be formal, as you can have guessed maybe. And I'd like to have your experiences. And I have a colleague here who I would like to have his professional experience. I'm a shrink, hardly the one to talk about joints, except where you get caught in joints. But the physiology of it, just enough for, oh, I'm one of the few lay people when it comes to joints, as it were, because we had this in med school, what, 45 years ago or something on that order. But the joints haven't changed much in that time. Treatment of them certainly has. Someone was telling me about, and I'd like to have him tell you about it later on, about the complete replacement of knees, for instance, and hips. And that sounded like magic in the day I went to med school. So, joints in some ways are real simple. And after all, they're just two bones that work together. And yet, when you stop to think of it, it's one of the more, well, technically exciting kind of things. When you think of that, you have just two bones that are working against each other. They have to keep you in line. You have to be able to move that joint freely, sometimes in several directions. Well, I guess only two directions. You wouldn't want to separate them much. But anyway, and you got to do it all with bread and butter, meat and potatoes. You don't have, unless you're replacing it, your body doesn't get the chance to put in a stainless steel knee when it's replacing or making a knee in the first place, or any of the joints. So to me, the knee, or any of our joints, the knee, because it's knee and hips have to take so much pressure. It's strange that they don't always wear out first, but sometimes our small joints, usually in fact, our small joints are the ones that give us most trouble. Joint is two pieces of bone in the first place, and they rub on each other when they're healthy with cartilage. Now, I should have made this as a double in the knee, for instance, and that's, I'm thinking of the knee as sort of a typical joint. This should be a double circle here so that it keeps it from sliding sideways as much and so on. It slides on this nice cartilage. It's, you've seen, you people in the kitchen have bone chicken and so on, haven't you? Seen the bones apart and seen the cartilage? It looks nice and shiny because usually we don't want to get the old hens in the kitchen. Excuse me, I'm not trying to be sexist now. The young ones and the cartilage is beautiful, and that's the way you like to see your own cartilage. Slides, has a little cushion effect. There's liquid that's in here because you have a capsule covering the whole joint. And I should have brought that in front, then you wouldn't have had to look at what we had inside either. The capsule does hold, it's stiff, made of pretty tough stuff, so it too holds the bones together. But you have ligaments here, and how many of you cooks are, when you think back now, can remember the ligaments in bones and joints? What would you call them? Sort of cord-like or material? Which attach. They have to have a little bit of spring in them, but they can't have very much I suppose how much give they have in them will determine whether you're a beautiful ballet dancer or sort of a stiff old man like me. I've been a stiff since I was a kid. I've never been able to sit down flat with my legs straight out in front of me. How many of you can do that now? You know, get your back up against the wall. Oh, you made me jealous. I worked with the Malagasy for almost 20 years, and no matter what your age or sex, you could sit against the wall and have your legs straight out in front of the floor because that's the way you lived. So I suppose that our daily behavior has a lot to do with how stiff those are going to be, because if you break an arm, well, let's make it a leg as long as, we'll put one more bone down here, and it'll look more like a leg, not very much more like a leg, but. Did you know that the tibia and the fibula were named in Latin for the fibula being this small bone that goes up here, and in Latin that referred to the safety pin that was used to hold clothes together, you know, the fancy. So this, you have a safety pin in here that you're walking on. Well, anyhow, if the joint is not moved, you have to put it in a cast. And you first get it out after several weeks, you're going to hardly move it. When I, as a youngster of 12, I guess, I had an infection in my arm, right up in here, called it blood poisoning in those days, don't have that anymore, because you name it more professionally now. And I had to leave the arm absolutely still because it hurt. And I didn't know any better anyway. I suppose it was 3 weeks that it was stiff, not cast or anything else, but stiff. And then there was a lot of blood coming there, I'm sure, because of the infection. Afterwards, I could not move that arm. Well, one of the things you should never do is carry weights to try and stretch a joint, because you overdo it, and then you get scarring and you have more trouble. But as a kid, I didn't know that, so I carried buckets of water to stretch my arm out. I'd hang from the rod above the door so that I'd stretch my arm out. And now, you know, 6 months, but it took 6 months to stretch them out again because these things had tightened, you know, the ligaments. And so when you young ladies are doing your ballet, the rest of us, you know, if we can get it that far, we're lucky, and you put it up to here someplace when you do your kicks and so on. Much of that is being able to stretch those ligaments. How about questions or stories at this point with ligaments and cartilage and so on? Nobody any good stories.
Are you going to talk about how to keep those ligaments in the best shape? How much to do and exercise or what?
Would you start us out on it? See, this is one, in a way, one layman talking to layman here.
Well, I just know that exercise is good, but I think I've been discovering that there's a point at which it's too much, and I'm not sure.
What happens when it's too much for you? What happens for you when it's too much?
Well, it hurts. Pain. I ache more, but I only ache at night, so I'm not yet. Maybe.
So it's only your husband that hears about it.
He doesn't even hear it. He's people, but I have wondered, now I'm trying to decide just how much exercise I should do and what's the best kind of exercise to keep those ligaments healthy.
What do the rest of you think?
It sounds familiar, and I solved it by sleeping on 8-crate mattresses. Because if you do, it seems like when you get older, when I get older, and I still try to do what I used to do, in the daytime I could get away with it, but at night, just awful. So I just put this 8-crate mattresses, you know what they are, they're the ones that they put in the hospital. You can get a 4-inch one or 2-inch. And it goes like this, just looks like you could put eggs all over it. And it's foam. You get it for $10 or $15.
You mean you lie in the
Yeah, yeah. But it cushions all of these sore, aching things all night long. You can sleep there.
Well, I don't have trouble with my knees by doing my
hip.
Any other, you know, that sounds, reminds me of the story of the princes and the pea, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I felt that way an awful lot of times, but I know it wasn't the princes. Any other things that you do when you do have aching? Now, even just lying on one joint, on the side or the knee, for me, and it depends on, sometimes I don't have it at all at night, and then other times I can lie for half an hour and I start aching and those areas. Yeah.
When do you use heat and when do you use cold?
That's what I was going to
ask. That's my question.
When do you use heat?
Well, it depends on what year it is. When it was the exciting thing had come through about the time I was in med school about, you know, you sprain your ankle, you put it in a bucket of, because you had been skiing anyway, and you got the snow out there, and you put it in a bucket of ice water, and it freezes you, but boy, it doesn't hurt like that. And that's true, it doesn't. Two things were, they found later, the problem that the cold does hit the pain sensation and numbs it. But then you're liable to be foolish and go out and use it when you might have a crack in it, a hairline crack in your bone, and you can wreck your joint with it. That's one thing. The other thing is that you want the blood to come for healing, because the blood also brings all the nutrients, takes all the repair products to and from. White cells to and from. It keeps the tissue from the liquid from leaking out into the tissue. Some people end up by saying, if, and you have to make up your own mind on this, because usually you aren't going to, if you go to a doctor, an orthopedist, he'll tell you what to do and you don't have to worry. But for yourself, the cold will stop the pain. If you don't have the pain, you've got to be the smart one to know how much you can use that. Blood is necessary, and therefore heat. Heat tends to expand the arterioles and allow better circulation. So certainly after 24 hours, and probably right away, you'll get more swelling and more pain, but you'll have quicker healing if you have heat. Take your choice. Isn't it nice to have real good answers?
I was told once that you put the cold on first to get down the swelling, and then use the heat treatment for the healing.
Yes, that does prevent some of the seepage into the area. So that's one of the positive things about the cold. Yes?
Does weather have anything to do with aches?
Sure. How do you feel about it? Have you noticed that it does? Which particular bothers you?
Or your other.
Anybody else experienced it?
Well, I used to think, and I don't really, I don't have bad, I'm not bad. I can't complain.
Oh, you're a good girl.
I'm really good. But I always felt I could tell when the weather was changing. The barometer was going up and down. And I really think that in the morning when I listened to the weather, it was moving. It was either going up or it was going down. I used to think it was only when it was going up, but I think it worked either way.
Either way seemed to change it. Now, I have no scientific background to support either way, but it certainly has been folklore for ages. Anybody know any scientific thing to back it up? You're always supposed to be, your war scars, you know, the old veterans are supposed to be grumbling whenever the weather changes. And it seems to me to be the same, but then that may be only because I'm looking for it that way. Ligaments. Ligaments don't have much blood supply to them. They're very strong this way, but they aren't this way. They will fray like a piece of cord. And one of the difficulties is, well, you can tear them off here. Oftentimes you tear off, well, fortunately not often, but you can tear a piece of bone off that they're attached to. Well, then you have to sew that bone back in place. If it's torn this way, you can see that it's hard to sew up. You know, if you try to sew two pieces of cord together, they don't have strength this way, and so you have to protect it. And that's just one of the reasons you go around wearing all this stuff to protect your joint when you've had a tendon rupture. One of the nastier places is in the Achilles heel, in the Achilles tendon from your heel, because you do use it a lot. You can't step off if that's pulled off. But you can do that any place. So, any other questions about that?
What's the difference between a ligament and a tendon? I never knew. That
hits
you below
that. It's sort of a technical term. The ligament is between two bones, and the tendon is between a muscle and the bone. Mm.
Okay.
They're pretty much the same when you look at them. The tendon, of course, spreads out into muscle when you get going, but the actual material itself, that'll have to slide over the joint. That always has to. One end of the muscle has to be attached to one bone and the other end to another bone. If they were both attached to the same bone, you'd have no movement. It's sort of shocking to me when I realized that all communications, almost all our communication, is by muscle. Can't smile without using your muscles. Can't talk. There you use all kinds of muscles. Your diaphragm, your ribs, bring the vocal cords, how you form them, how you're forming your mouth, your tongue, the whole bit. There's just a whole scat of them. And those muscles are always attached to two different things, naturally. It's awful simple-minded when I once got to thinking about it, but how else would I communicate? Even if I move my eyes, wink. Someone was asking about what important ways of communication the other day, I think in my wife's class. And I was thinking a wink is, you know, for such a small movement can be very important. Somebody tells you something.
I just remind a little boy that I had in school who could not smile, nor could he wink. And that was quite a learning experience for the other children and for me.
And you know what it caused that?
There was something wrong. I don't know what it was. I don't even know if he could get better.
Paralysis of the nerve feeding those muscles, probably. So someplace along the line, and there would be several places.
I believe he had it all his life, basically. Mm-hmm. He'd learned to cope with it quite well. But it's really strange to look at John. His smile couldn't show any kind of expression at all. Mm-hmm.
It's one of the problems of Parkinsonism, for instance. Mm-hmm. One of the most hardest burdens for them to bear oftentimes, because they get a wooden face. And they have all these emotions, but we don't read them as such. You have to listen someplace, listen for them, and so on.
I was wondering, when you hear about this new knee surgery where they go in the side of the knees to make an incision, was that that they were going to take the ligament out, or?
Probably I can't tell you an actual incident that happened just about 6-7 weeks ago. Brother-in-law's father, who's 74 or 75, went to Midland, Texas, and he had both knees replaced completely. So that's exactly what they did, because he had worn out the cartilage in between.
I'm wearing out the cartilage now.
It was worn out completely, and so he could no longer walk or get up with a lot of pain, and one could even hear, shall we say, the noise of that. So evidently there's a specialist in Midland, Texas, at least people from all over, where Midland, Texas is exactly, someplace in West Texas, in case the rest of you are interested, and a knee replacement. Only after the knee replacement, they kept him there for physical therapy, and very concentrated, so to speak, and now he's without pain, and he's able to walk, take a walk. He said, it's just great. He said, for the last 10 or 15 years, I've been unable to walk without severe pain. He said, now he said, I'm free of that. He doesn't have a lot of lateral move, but back and forth and so on like that, and sleeping and all of that, no longer does have that pain. But this is a specialist that does that, and he will accept, irregardless of age. But he'll also interview you, because the attitude, he says, is very important whenever I do one of these. But my understanding is he did have his own ligaments, shall we say, as part of that. That was one of the pluses for him. But everything else was replaced. They cut it in top and cut it in bottom. Inserted stainless steel and whatever other material they used.
Plastic,
yeah, on both of them. And all within the period of 2 weeks did they do both of them.
One of the problems with knee replacements is that they don't last forever. I don't know just how long. I think it depends on how much you use them and what your body reaction to it is. It's still a foreign body, and the body does try to get rid of it.
Getting rid of the cartilage here means that you have bone on bone. It gets shiny, and if there are the pain endings in the bone, it gets shiny, it gets like ivory. It's called an ivory bone,
or ebony bone.
And they'll slide all right, but they don't slide as well naturally as with cartilage. It's painful, it doesn't have all the things you want for cartilage. It doesn't have that good bounce in it. The elastic properties of the cartilage is gone, and so you can get a bunch. One of the things that's thought to happen, by some at least, that this bone right in there, in the two sides, have microfractures in it, and that makes the bone very dense when it heals and gives you pain. Some people have a lot of pain, some have not, but it is not a good knee without the cartilage here. There's also a pad of cartilage in there, meniscus, I think it's called, and that can get torn. You hear about the tearing of the cartilage in the football players and all that. You can imagine what happens if
when some, you know, 250 pounds comes hurtling at you, and this is why clipping is so bad. That's hitting this knee from this side, and it's fastened on the bottom with your 150 or 100, 200 pounds, and on the top, and then somebody comes and hits you, it tends, this is all right, may be crushed here a little, but you just ripped those ligaments right out. Anyway, it becomes very, this can be fractured, can actually break up and block the movement some way. So now they have just a telescope, not just, but a telescope that they can slip in, which is, I haven't seen them, I imagine they're not much different from a cystoscope. And some of us have had the unfortunate experience, I'm sure, of a cystoscope. They can make a slit here in this capsule, in the knee in the first place, in the skin, through the capsule, look in, you can see what actually is going on then. Probably either blow it up, I don't know, I haven't seen that done, either blow it up or fill it with liquid, I imagine blow it up so that you can see what's going on there. And then with, I think you were mentioning, somebody was mentioning about the laser. The light can be led in with a fiber, a glass fiber. There's several of them, of course, in that case. And then you get an immense amount of power in a small place, which burns, essentially, burns up the whatever it is. If you have, well, along with this, you can also have growth. And those of us who have large joints, in particular the end ones in our fingers, and 50% of us probably over 65 do have a little bit of enlargement. Anyway, that may enlarge right in here, or like I have there, and if you have one there and one here, the two can actually lock, and they won't move. So he'd slip this in and can cut that off, evidently. I presume that's what is done in the arm. And it's, that can all be done with your with the skin and the capsule intact, almost intact, you've had that hole in it. Any orthopedic surgeon is just terribly frightened of bacteria because bone infections are mean, they're nasty. So I don't know how they do it now. I know when back in the dark ages, when I was an intern with them, we had three layers of sheets and three layers of protection that against infection coming in there. You just didn't want to have it. So you can see that not only is it much nicer for you, you have a much smaller hole to heal up, but it's, you have much less chance of infection, and you get out of bed in a hurry, maybe even do it out of an outpatient nowadays. But anyhow, that's what's done. If you need to replace the whole knee, you can do that now with stainless steel, probably, and something like Teflon. It has to be material which the body will not really reject. And it comes pretty close to it with some of our Teflon. Another place that happens is in the knee, I mean in the hip, we're talking about the knee. Any of you had a hip replacement? How was it?
Well, before I had it, I was in pain constantly, and it was just unbelievable. When I woke up, I had no pain.
And how long had you had the pain?
Well, the pain, I must have had it for about, well, it kept getting worse, but I had it bad for about 5 years.
Mm-hmm. And how long have you had the replacement now?
8 years.
How is it now?
Well, the cement is starting to loosen up now. Mm-hmm.
So that means, what does that mean to you?
That means that when I have enough pain, I'll go back for another one.
And how do you notice, is it the same pain you had before, a general ache or what?
I really haven't had the pain yet, so. And I.
How do you know that it's loose?
I had x-rays.
So, and they
you have to go
with
back,
that.
You know, they like you to come back at least once a year to take an x-ray to see that it's. And the last time I went, he told me there was a small area. And then I went a couple weeks before I came up here just to make sure that it was still okay. Mm-hmm. And the reason I use a cane is to keep the weight off that hip as much as possible so I don't irritate it.
Do you know where it is loosening? Which?
It's loosening where the bone is, goes into the femur.
On the bottom part. Mm-hmm. I would have thought it would be the other way, but that was it. That's sort of the hip joint. And then you have a piece glued on here onto the hip. You have the and then it's about down in here someplace.
Right.
And that's starting to slip.
That's starting to get loose.
So probably it moves around on it, does it?
Yeah.
And it's the it's this, what do they call it, magic glue? What do they call that? Crazy, isn't it? Crazy glue. That's in my department. You have to be very careful when you use it because you can stick when they poured a bunch of this crazy glue on the floor and made the guys hold their hands on it so that they couldn't get up and run away. Well, the surgeon tries to do a better job of it than that, but that's the same idea. And some people have a lot of trouble. I mean, it isn't perfect by any means, particularly with this spot that it tends to slide off, as I understand, you know, the fastening end of the hip. Depends on how good the bone is in the hip. You got a lot of things that you can have trouble with.
How does it look when you do have arthritis in the hip? How does the bone look? Do you know?
Well, some of you had x-rays.
Instead of a solid, it's all sort of crinkly and nubby. It's not smooth.
And calcium deposits are built up.
Yeah, bone, actual bone.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Into the bone and spurs on the bone.
Mm-hmm. Another thing that you professionally look for, and if you can see that, would be if this cartilage is out of there, you aren't going to have that space between the bones. So you can tell just by an x-ray whether the cartilage is there or not. You can tell by the way it feels too, but by looking at the x-ray you can see how much.
Well, their bones are kind of different when you're getting older. They always say the rest of your body, use it or lose it. But bones, you kind of want to take it easy sometimes, huh?
Okay, what about that? Well, what's the disease problem called we have?
Osteoporosis?
Yeah. What do we have until 25 up or 20 up? We got 15 minutes to talk about osteoporosis. Is that, I never like to finish them because then if I made a mistake nobody noticed.
This is like doctor's handwriting.
You know, I had to have some indication that I was professional. What about osteoporosis? What does the word mean?
Osteo's bone
thread.
And?
Horse part.
It's holy bones.
It's a good topic for this whole place. Holy bones.
Without the W. I don't know. I'm sure that the pastors here would be aware that holy and The H-O-L-Y and the W-H-O are related, whether you're whole or and so on. Here, however, it refers to the other type, not that you're WH, but that you have holes through it, which is... Bone is very interesting. We tend to think of bone as being dead, as being like the steel skeleton of a house or something, but it isn't. It's as living as any of the rest of our body is. If we have a huge bone there, there are several parts to it. Now, actually, you wouldn't have this sharp separation there, but my abilities as a sketcher or an artist are not going to let me do anything else. This is called the cortex, and inside, do you know what this is called? Marrow? Why not call it marrow? That's what it is. There are a bunch of fine trabeculi here, or sort of a web on the inside, which actually goes all the way through, only it gets very dense out in here. On one side of the, if this is part of the web, and this is microscopic, on both you have layers of cells. Let's put X's on one of them. And I'm not sure that this is more than schematic, that you don't have a mixture of the two at any time. But just for our understanding of it, make it schematic and say, one side is laying down bone all the time. The other side is eating it up all the time. If you laid down bone all the time, we'd end up dead because we'd be all bone, naturally. And if we had only the phagocytic cells, the osteoclasts, eating the bone, then we'd be a bag of jelly. So these two have to be balanced. But you see, the advantage of that is that if you work hard, I mean, as far as physical work is, bending the bone, you don't think of your bone bending. It doesn't bend like this, but there's stress and strain on the bone. It does change it enough to stimulate, if you're doing that a lot, it stimulates the ones that lay down the bone, and you get a heavier bone because those trabeculi build up. If you're just sitting around in bed, lying around in bed, these will eat the bones. And it's a remarkable, I can't remember exactly now, but the amount of calcium that you lose just by staying in bed for 3 weeks is remarkable.
They were worried about that with the astronauts when they came back.
Mm-hmm. Because they weren't
floating.
Yeah, they weren't loading their legs particularly. What did they do, exercise them? That would be an illogical thing anyway. Then you can see the advantage of exercise and why walking is very good for you. It may be hard on your joints. And it does, it wears out your joints. Use wears out the joints, but use will build up your muscles. Muscles, that's true, but the bone. It builds them faster than they're eaten up, hopefully. Now, in osteoporosis, there's the ordinary kind, the normal kind. Any of us who are confined to bed for 3 weeks will have marked the loss of bone. Most of us, if we exercised again, would have that built right back up again. Those who have severe osteoporosis, for some reason, and we don't understand even yet, and we thought about, they were wondering about that 45 years ago, and they're still doing it, you know. That we don't know why some people can't build up and get these things to lay the material down faster. One thing, you've got to have the calcium. So calcium in the diet is good. On the other hand, if you load your body with calcium, it can only use a certain amount, and the rest of it goes out in what? Where do you think it would go?
Urine.
Urine. And you, if you happen to be a stone former, kidney stone former, you're liable to end up with kidney stones. So that's one of the things. Like this, should you use hot water or cold water for your spray? So we try to be careful about how much calcium we give. How do you get your calcium?
Milk
is one.
Pills.
Pills. And when you get them in pills, you know what you're eating usually?
Oyster shells.
Just like the chickens. Well, why not? In fact, some have suggested that when you put your eggs in the blender, you shouldn't break them first. Just dump them in. And it would work well because the calcium and the hydrochloric acid in your stomach would destroy the, would dissolve the...
Unless they've been sprayed with preservative.
If they've been waxed good, why maybe it wouldn't work so good.
Well, they ship me eggs, you know, over to Hawaii, they're all sprayed with the shellac, so they'll last longer.
Because eggs are porous, the shell is porous. I mean, that's how the embryo breathes. And if you shellac them, they have less oxygen going. So, one of the things is to have calcium. Do you know what else? Yes?
Not on the advice of my doctor, but on my own, whatever. I guess these calcium tablets were on sale, so I took them. And at first I started taking one a day, now I've limited it to every other day. But now my roommate tells me that it doesn't do me any good unless I take magnesium. Also. I have a son who's a pharmacist, so maybe I can ask him.
I would advise you to ask him. Certainly you need magnesium, but most of us can't get away from not having magnesium. An ample supply. That's many of these trace substances. One of the difficulties in doing experiments on them was to try and get a diet that didn't have them in. We're fortunate that way. But there were iron is a trace substance, and you have to be sure that you get enough of that. Iodine the same way. Now we sneak it in your salt. So what else would you think you would need for to work on a bowl?
Vitamin D.
Yeah. And there is the vitamin D is not the chemical name for it. There are several types, and I guess there's one particular type. Do you know if they're, what the name of the one particular one they're pushing for that? Any of you? I don't remember. But one of them, and again, if you have osteoporosis, it is a serious kind of a thing. You want to get your family physician to follow you, because it's not something you're going to get over. It's the way your body is set up at this moment. And that is one thing that, well, what are the danger? Who is most in danger?
Women.
I hate to be sexist, but here is one place. In general, women are built better than men.
Yeah.
You outlive us by 7 years, and there's no way that you're going to prove that you aren't built better than I am if you're going to outlast me. And by that much, I mean, it's shocking. But you do have problems with osteoporosis, some. Some do. So one thing is you want calcium, you want vitamin D. What else?
Hard work.
Right. Hard work is good for women. And men.
You know, sometimes when there's surgery, I had a daughter who was an accident, her knee was just smashed. And sometimes to stimulate bone growth, they use electrical impulses. Mm-hmm. Or they use, just by tapping, the calcium has dropped more over the use. So they're just having tapping like this.
So tap dancing should be
the calcium deposits. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so this electrical business, stimulation, is fascinating to think that. And possibly it is related to what happens in the bone ordinarily when you exercise it, that the piezoelectric, certain crystals, if you bend them, you get a charge on one plate, on one side, a positive and negative on the other side. And most of us are wearing at this point an example of that. Your watch. The quartz watch runs on that principle. The crystal will only vibrate at a particular frequency, and so it becomes very accurate. But that same kind of thing probably happens in the bone, gives you some stimulation and causes it to grow, and you sneak up on it by putting this electrical stimulation to it. I'm not acquainted too well with that. I don't know how successful it is with everybody or with some people, but that happens.
I want to ask, should, in order to avoid having osteoporosis, should they start when they were young to take calcium and vitamin D, or would they get it anyway?
I can't answer that. To be honest.
Isn't it usually at menopause?
Yeah, very seldom it is seen before menopause. Certainly if it's seen before. But, and that brings up, what else do you think has some relationship to it then?
The hormones.
All right. Mm-hmm. And probably estrogen. It's the only one I've heard bandied about, but. So, first of all, if you want to prevent it, be a male.
I'm part of
an osteoporosis study at the University of Washington Medical School, and they say there that most women start to give up some of their calcium at least by age 35, mm-hmm. and that Scandinavian, particularly, or North European people are particularly prone to it. There is also a hereditary factor. And there are two kinds. You can have one of the flat bones and one of the long bones. And there are also several different diagnostic studies, and you don't necessarily get a diagnosis simply from an x-ray, back x-ray.
Any other experience with it? Very interesting, thank you.
Yeah. I have broken four vertebrae before I found out I had osteoporosis of the spine. Mm-hmm. And it is something that you should start taking, like 800 milligrams of calcium as a young adult. And that's three glasses of milk or whatever. But now I'm supposed to be taking like 1400 milligrams of calcium along with the vitamin D. And now that the pain has subsided, I can start walking again. Mm-hmm. And I'm also on the hormone therapy also.
And why don't we just give all women hormones?
Because not everybody needs it. Everybody's different.
That is one of the studies that they're doing, but they're particularly concerned about giving options to people even who have not had hysterectomies.
Because?
There is a slight possibility of cancer from the hormone administration.
Cancer of the
uterus,
the inside, not the cervix, but the uterus. And, you know, most of medicine is a balance, is playing the odds. And maybe lay people in general don't realize that. But in general, you're playing the odds. You say a lot of things, it's a million to one, and that's fine, but somebody's going to get caught on that millionth time. More likely 100,000 or 10,000 to 1. When it gets to be 10,000 to 1, then you start to worry. Because somebody's going to end up in your practice that way, so you're very careful that people know what problems are, and you have to make the decision as a patient, as the one being worked on. It's your body. So you have to make the final decision. It's our business to make you as educated as possible, to give you all the information we can, and to give what we might want to do if we were in your place, but you're the one who has to make the decision. I got into a sermon there, didn't I? Where were we? On this, for instance, a vertebrae, the pressures are particularly severe on the front part of your vertebrae, so that tends to happen, and you get a crook in your back from it. It's painful, can be very painful. When did you start noticing them?
I picked up a little fella, put him into his high chair, and I ended up with excruciating pain in my lower back. Obviously, I didn't pick him up. But studies have shown that picking up a child like that puts 500 pounds of pressure on your vertebrae. And mine was weak, didn't stand that, and it did this wedge fracture. And x-rays show that I had two other fractures from who knows when that I didn't realize they had done. And 4 months after the first one, I fractured another vertebrae in trying to exercise in bed instead of on the flat floor.
It's really a problem.
Yeah, it just came on all of a sudden for me. Mm-hmm. Other people begin to realize that they can't reach as high as they used to. Yeah, and I lost 2 inches of height in that time.
It isn't only the front part, the whole thing can...
Yeah, and your whole body has to readjust to the change in height, your ribs, your muscles, and it's really painful time. It took 8 months or more before I began that I could sit down without hurting or stand up without hurting or begin to be moving around. One thing you said before about it pays to work hard. If you have this condition, though, you don't go picking up things over 10 pounds because more injuries can happen if you work too hard at something.
And particularly as far as the back is concerned, and you want to be careful of how you know, women with fractured hips, one of the more dangerous things you have in your house is your bathtub. It's awfully hard to get up out of the bathtub. One thing one should remember, the only hint I can give, is that you have to have your feet under you when you get up. Most of us start having loss of muscle in our quadriceps anyway, and it's hard to get up. And it helps if you got your feet directly under you. Otherwise, they slide out in front, you fall down, and just that little falling may fracture your hip.
Another word of caution, while we talk about the value of exercise and hard work, long distance runners, women, or hard joggers can produce in themselves this kind of spontaneous osteoporosis, especially those who do it to the degree where they stop menstruating.
And maybe that loss of estrogen has something to do with it. Another thing that the runners, and why it's better to walk than to run, and we are joking about the hard work, but the exercise of the bone must be done conservatively, but still, one of the things you'd think that more weight on it should be good for the bones. So you should be 375. But that wears out your joints and puts extra stress on the bones. I don't know that it doesn't, that it hurts the bones, but it certainly hurts the joints.
Well, when you're walking, you're not pounding on one side of you, and you still have a little bit of support. But when you're jogging, you have all your weight on one side of your body and then the other, with with a slight time in between when there's nothing, and so there's a lot more pressure when you're jogging. No wonder it breaks stuff down.
Right. Even walking, you can. We went up to Heart Lake, and last week, I guess, last Thursday or Friday. Coming back, Saturday, I could feel it in the top of my head as I was walking even. And you can imagine if I could do that when I'm walking, the jogging would do that much more to you. So I'm not a jogger, therefore I can't see anything in jogging, you see. The walking is probably the best all around.
No, I'm like this lady over here. I'm not bad in my knees, but I do have arthritis. And you said to prevent the holy bone, exercise is good, but then how far do you go with, like with walking? If it hurts, should you keep going, or what about non-inflammatory drugs like morphine?
Okay. Pain usually is a pretty good indication that, hey, you've come to your limit. I had a coronary. Fortunately, it didn't kill any, damage the muscle itself, and I was able to get over it and the pain. And it was suggested that I walk until I started to feel the pain. That was the limit. In a way, no pain, no gain. But you want to be very careful with that, because pain is an indication of getting to your limit. Pain is a blessing. Now, shouldn't talk that way to us in this area. We don't believe that. But anyone who has seen somebody, or even when, remember when the last time I had a tooth fixed, they gave me a block, and the whole lip was numb. I couldn't feel it. And I tended to injure that lip, you know, bite on it and so on, because it didn't feel like it was there. I didn't own it. I couldn't feel it. Pain is one of the greatest blessings we have, appropriate pain. Inappropriate pain in itself is not, but it gets us to the doctor, it gets us resting, it keeps us from overdoing. A leper, I've seen a number of them, and they'll have holes in their hands, or particularly in their feet, because they don't feel any pain, so they got a hole there, so what? So they walk out it and they get a worse hole. And part of the big problem in leprosy is that people don't feel, don't have pain. So pain is a blessing. Appropriate pain.
And then to me, there's pain and then there's pain. I mean, there's just this kind of a dull ache, which I have a lot of the time. Well, if I were to not walk or, you know, limit myself, I wouldn't do a lot
right.
of times. So there again, I think that's back to the trial and error type thing. I ignore that more or less. In fact, I don't notice it after I start walking more.
Stiffness is that way, yes?
Excuse me, there's a marvelous book this big. It's called Pain Erasure, and maybe some of you remember the early days of TV, Bonnie Pruden, P-R-U-D-D-E-N, Bonnie Pruden. And she was the first aerobics lady on TV that did all kinds of exercise and stuff. Well, now she's in her old 70s, and when she Franny had something go wrong with her that she could no longer be this athletic, wonderful, slim chick, you know. And so, and things started aching as she got older. So this, she set up this pain erasure clinic, institute, and they have all ways of training yourself to lower your pain threshold without drugs. And some of it's stuff like biofeedback and all kinds of helpful things. And she trains people all over the country. And I got on her mailing list and I spent $25 for a big book because I thought someday I would hurt. And I wouldn't want to always take aspirin. But the, you have to go for 3 days to be trained just to know how to handle your own body. But she does this in Seattle, she does it in LA, and she has in Backy somewhere this, this huge campus where she trains people for this and are certified. Great.
Any other? Okay, we're beyond our time. Anybody else want to have the last word? We didn't even hit aspirin, we should have. Something is going to happen.